outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Gym.
Surprise, surprise, surprise. I know we said we were going to skip this week, and I fully planned on it, until this weekend happened. And after this weekend, I got on my heart to think, you know what? I know Kyle can't be here this week, but I have some things I'd love to explore with you. And maybe Kyle and I'll revisit it if there's more he wants to discuss about it later. Or your questions can also be part of that. If there's things you want to send me, say, hey, I'd love to know more about this or that. I also want to share with you something God put on my heart to help people who are going through kinds of crisis. And not just for you, but how to help others near you, whom you love, who are going through this. But before I do, let me just let you know that we finally have the audio version of Just Love out. Toby and I read the book together in various places. Glad to have the audio version out. I know a lot of you have been asking for quite a while, give us the audio versions. It's available. And you can order that from Amazon or Audibles, wherever you get your audiobooks. And one more thing before we get to today's topic. I'm going to be in Toronto next weekend, at least in the Toronto area. If you're nearby and you want to hang out with me and some other folks on this journey, you'd be welcome to join us. I just found out that we have some extra space available, so we're throwing a little wider net. If you're in the area, want to show up the weekend, we start on Friday night, Saturday, and Sunday, about an hour east of Toronto. Details will be linked at the bottom of this podcast, or you can find them on the travel page at lifestream.org. Now, let me tell you about our weekend. I'm Wayne Jacobson, and on this special episode of The God Journey, we're going to talk about multiple myeloma and caring for people who find themselves in times of crisis. Not a lot of people ask me about my cancer diagnosis from a couple of years ago. I think it's awkward for people and they're afraid. I do notice, though, when I'm with people I haven't seen for a while, they go, hey, you look great. And I'm going, yeah, I look pretty much the same as I did 2 years ago before the diagnosis, that's for sure. Just to give you a little, you know, where am I at in this journey myself? My myeloma over a year ago now, I would say almost a year and 4 months ago, went into deep remission. It continues to stay there, even though my medication shifts a bit. I have a monthly treatment of a drug to keep the myeloma under control, and that seems to be working for the time being. And so we're incredibly grateful for that. When I was diagnosed 2 years ago, one of the first things I was told about myeloma is it is incurable. And one of the things we learned at the seminar coming up is the scientists who are working on this no longer call it incurable. In fact, what they're not saying it's curable yet, but they're saying they're getting very close to finding the kind of treatment that can actually eradicate this from the body. Right now, they can suppress it and put it in the dark place where it doesn't show up much and doesn't do any damage. But in almost every patient, at some point, there's a relapse. And that can come in 2 months. That can come in 10, 12, 13 years. There's no rhyme or reason to how it recurs, when it recurs. You enjoy the remission when you have it. I have it now. There's nothing I can't do now that I could do 2 years ago. That back's pretty much healed from the back surgery that the myeloma caused, the degeneration of a vertebrae in my back. And I'm pretty much back to full strength, doing whatever it is that I need to do, want to do, can do. And so when you see me, you wouldn't know that I have it at all. It's not apparent. It's not obvious. I'm not weakened by it. I suffer a few very minor side effects from the treatment, but nothing that is noticeable to anybody else. And so I'm very grateful for that. I'm very grateful for how deep we are in remission. Let me tell you what multiple myeloma is. It's a blood disease. It's cancer of the plasma cells, which should be about 1% to 2% of your blood cells. And when it gets above 10% and the cells are slightly deformed by the myeloma, and then instead of nourishing your body, they tend to attack it. I attacked mine in my bones, my vertebrae. Other people have it in their kidneys. In fact, they say if you have a kidney disease that's difficult for your doctor to ascertain where that's coming from, you might want to check multiple myeloma because that's one of the things. Anemia is one of the things it causes. It's twice as likely in Black people as it is in white people. So it's kind of a disease that attacks a certain group more than others, which is unfortunate. More female than male. But I happen to be one of those who ended up with this disease. And so me and Jesus are navigating it. And I know people, when they hear about it, they want to pray for healing. And my goodness, go right ahead. Pray for all the healing you want to. I talk to Jesus about it regularly. But I don't live my life to be healed from this. I gave up that a long time ago. I live with it. I also don't define my life by it. So if you're with me, I'm generally not talking cancer unless you bring it up. Because it's right now doesn't impact my life at all, for which I'm very grateful. But that may not continue forever. We'll see what happens, how it affects me down the road. Also know that if relapse comes, one of the big takeaways from the conference Sarah and I attended this weekend is how many treatments are now available to people at the point of relapse. 10 years ago, it would have been a stem cell transplant, bone marrow transplant, very painful, very costly, very intrusive. And now they're moving away from all that because they're finding that there's other treatments that are even more effective and not quite as complicated or costly. That's encouraging. I love the fact that we're talking more about maybe this is curable someday or maybe Jesus heals it. I don't know where this is going. As I said, very grateful for the journey we're on. Sarah and I both are at rest with what's unfolding here, and we'll see how it ends up. So while we appreciate all the input and love and compassion that we get from people, let me tell you, Sarah and I are well covered in the things going on in our life. Through our friendships and contacts, people pray for us and express their love and encouragement to us in a variety of ways. And we are deeply grateful for that. And this podcast, though, is not about getting more people to try and do that for us. We would really love it if you have some compassion for me and what we're going through, that you would find some other people in your life to share that with. Find somebody going through a divorce, someone going through a bankruptcy, someone with a different kind of cancer or this kind of cancer, or just someone going through a difficult time, and love them and reach out to them and offer to walk alongside them, because that they need the support more than we do. Sarah and I get more than our share and we're incredibly grateful for it, but we're also not wanting to be a care hog, because there's lots of folks out there that need care that have less connections than we do and less people involved in their lives. The very first day of this conference, they start talking about the importance of emotional and spiritual growth. And of course, that caught my eye right away. Spiritual growth, really. And so they talked about how to transit this disease and not lose a sense of faith if you bring it into this disease, and how to keep your emotional well-being in a stable place and let the disease be a place where you can find greater resilience and presence. That was actually on the slideshow up on the stage. And I was really touched by the fact that they seem to have some really important emphasis on spiritual care. They talked about emotional care, and they have a lot of support groups and things that help people with that. They talk about medical care, and they've got tons of that. Great doctors, research people, all the top researchers in multiple myeloma in the U.S. were at this conference and spoke at different times and took questions, and that was brilliant. But they kept talking about the spiritual component, but I didn't see anywhere where that was actually happening. So during the first break, I actually ended up near the table where a lot of the staffers from the International Myeloma Foundation were sitting. And one had been introduced as a care team coordinator. And so I went over and introduced myself to her and said, hey, I'd like to ask you some questions, if I could, about what you're doing in the spiritual impact. Because I see it on your slides, but I don't see anywhere where that has any kind of place, what you're doing about that. And she said, you know, that's really a great question, because she said, we really don't. We've struggled to, how do we do this? How do we provide spiritual care for people who find that a diagnosis of cancer like this incredibly shakes their faith? Because we know their emotional and spiritual well-being are important to the process of healing. If depression sets in or hopelessness sets in, then that only allows the disease to grow even more. They said they're very much got their eye on it, but they haven't figured out how to address it yet. And she asked then if I felt like I needed some spiritual care. And I said, actually, I don't think I do at this point. I said, I came into this when I was first diagnosed. I said, I didn't once shake my faith. And when I found out more about it, Sarah and I wanted to get involved in some care group stuff just to help be a resource for people who are struggling. Because we're not. The day may come when this disease is far more aggressive in our lives than it is today. And I said, but I really wanted to take the opportunity to get to know people. And if people are struggling in their faith, be an encouragement to them. I said, I used to be a pastor. I'm the co-author of The Shack. And she stopped. What? You what? And she really drilled. She said, oh, I love that movie. I love that book. It's such a powerful book. And I said, yeah, and it's about people finding their way to God, even through great pain and difficulty. And I said, if you guys want somebody to help you from the outside, just a volunteer, I'm not looking for a job, but if you want some help along these lines, I said, I'd really make myself available. I gave her my card. She gave me hers. She said, I'm going to be in touch with you, Wayne, because this is an important part and we haven't nailed it down yet. So I said, great. At 4 o'clock in the morning, I woke up. And I was thinking about this brief conversation, and then my mind just exploded. And I think God was there with my mind, putting stuff in my heart, saying, here's a process that a care group could do, or even one-on-one counseling could do for people who are struggling with this kind of crisis of faith in the midst of some kind of stuff. And all these things you can see in The Shack, because we wove them into The Shack in terms of Mac's healing process as he discovers God in the midst of his pain and trial. So I wrote up some notes and I talked to this lady the next day. In fact, when we sat down for lunch on Saturday, somebody was sitting across the table and we were talking to the couples right next to us. And then I introduced myself across the table and she was looking at me and said, I know who you are. I said, you know who I am. What do you mean? She said, you talked to my care coordinator yesterday and I'm her boss. And she said, I needed to meet you before this conference ended. I said, is that why you're here? She said, no, I just happened to sit at this table. I didn't know that's who you were until I heard you talking about it. I'm going, that must be who he is. And so she gave me her card. She said she wanted to talk more and try to figure out how they could do this better. Could they have some chaplains, people that are available for a Zoom call for somebody who's got a crisis of faith? Is it, they want to know if I would lead a faith care group where people who are struggling with faith could be a part of it. And I said, yeah, I'm very open to doing that kind of thing. I do quite a bit on Zoom, so I'm not afraid of it. Happy to do it. Definitely prefer face-to-face if possible, particularly when you're talking about things like this. So she said, well, we want to talk more. I said, I've got a little thing I drew up today. Maybe I'll pass it your way. And as I worked on Monday, got my notes kind of in order, I thought, this is what I would love to share. Not just with them, but with you. Because I think people who are on a more relational journey with God do have moments of incredible, overwhelming crisis. And how does faith, how does God's presence get through the kinds of fears, demands, insecurities? Because when you get diagnosed with something like multiple myeloma or breast cancer, or your business is going bankrupt that you thought God was blessing, or your marriage falls apart, or there's just so many ways in this world our life can go sideways without even a hint that it's coming. And then all of a sudden, tragedy is upon you. And how do you find your way through that? How would I, that's the question that I was processing on Saturday morning at 4 o'clock. How would I help someone whose faith is under attack because of some great need in their life? I think God was in this. I think it's not only helpful for you if you've got a crisis like that and you're finding your way through it. These may be some things that'll help. I also think maybe this little 5-point process, which is not steps. You don't get me started on steps. This is not steps to healing. This is just 5 things to keep your eye on and how people transit through them. These things could take someone a month and a half. They could take someone 4 years to transit through. So it's not a process. It's not, apply this salve to that wound and everything's going to be better. But it is a way to kind of think about how it is that I might care for somebody. So the first one is this: find a safe, non-judgmental space for honest reflection. Find a space. And that's, if we do care groups, that's what I'd want. There's a non-judgmental, just sit and let the honesty come out of your heart. So described it this way. It could be with a support group, a friend or counselor, but find those with whom you can share how your diagnosis has shaken your faith, your assumptions about God, or your sense of safety. Look for people who won't rush to defend God or resolve your tension. They will simply offer a caring heart and a listening ear. That we stole from Joni Menard, if you remember the podcast we did there. Just offer that to people. Let their struggle surface. When our struggles are in the dark and we're all alone with them, they have so much power. And if we try to express it, and immediately people start giving advice, well, you can't talk about God that way. You've got to do. As soon as that advice starts happening, people shut down. Because they can pretend on the outside to say all the right words to keep you happy, but keeping you happy shouldn't be their need or ambition or afraid of being judged like you're a faithless, worthless person because you have these struggles or doubts and when you've been handed a huge tragedy. And so how do we provide that for people? Look for people who don't rush to defend God. They're able to be a witness to your pain and offer a caring heart and a listening ear. I just want to be with you. I just want you to know I hurt where you hurt. I get that this is painful for you. And I don't have to fix it. Don't even try. Because what we're doing is not trying to fix people. We're trying to empower them from the inside to let the Spirit answer the things the Spirit needs to answer, not the things we need to throw at people. And so they need our support and our love and our empathy. They don't need us to start quoting scriptures and start fixing what they're doing. So the second thing, find a place where you can be honest and reflect, just really down deep honest. I said before, when Sarah was gone, one of my friends, I sat down with a local friend, he's a Presbyterian pastor here in town. We sat down and I was sharing with him what was going on. And at the end of our conversation, he looked at me and said, Wayne, when you get to anger and you're processing all this, I wasn't angry at the time. In fact, I never did get angry. But he said, when you get to anger, I want you to come vent it on me. And I knew how sincere he was. Not he's going to fix it. I just don't want you to vent it on someone who can't handle it. I'm offering you a place to vent it. And man, I've never been offered a greater gift in a time of suffering than that. I never used it because anger never set in. But man, to have a place, I've offered it to numerous people since. When you get to anger here, which is part of the whole process of denial and anger and all the things that happen when something desperate sets into our lives. I said, come vent it on me. I'll hold your anger with you. And I'm not going to yell at you. I'm not going to try and fix it. Let it go. And the second thing is, let yourself face what has changed. Make room for the grief, the fear, the anger, the loss, and uncertainty that the diagnosis has brought. Faith doesn't minimize pain or pretend everything is fine. I actually really like that. Faith doesn't pretend. We don't have to minimize it. This is about the disease. So this is about diagnosis, but it could be the death of a child. It could be there's so many ways life in an age of chaos disrupts us. And if we could be honest about that and reflective, and express it. Man, I have expressed this kind of anger at God. I've had times. It's been a long time since I've really given it to God. I don't always find that that was helpful. Maybe it was to get it out. I don't always find he invaded me right there with, okay, you're really angry. I better give you the answers you need. He just let the anger work itself out until that humility of heart would settle in at some point where I would really care more about what he thinks than what I think. So number one, find a safe base for honesty. Number two, let yourself face what has changed. And in some way, accept the reality into your life. That doesn't mean you embrace the disease. It doesn't mean, oh man, I'm glad I have this cancer. I'm going through this challenge. It just means, okay, it is part of my life. I'm going to stop running from it. And I'm going to embrace all the emotions that have come with it. And then step three is this, invite God into the questions. And I think it's better, we can get the anger and the venting and screaming and yelling, and that's fine, get all that out. At some point, you want to find out what the questions are. And you want to invite God into the questions. So rather than suppressing your questions, wrestle with them openly. The goal isn't to find tidy answers, but to discover how God is present with you as you explore the questions you bring to Him. I love this part. Because what it is, it's beginning to open to God inside the questions. It's not getting it fixed and then me and God will be okay. It's that God can be present with me when I ask questions like, did He do this to me? Am I being punished for something I did wrong? Is He allowing this to teach me something? How can I trust God when He didn't protect me from this? Now, those are all questions, and there may be others, but letting people sort out the questions that are most important. I like that first one. Did He do this to me? That's taken from a movie called The City of Angels, where some angel, this is a contrived Hollywood stuff, but some angel decides to become human because he's in love with Meg Ryan and she's a doctor and he becomes human so they can have a romance. And then the way this story works out, if an angel chooses to become human, they can't go back to being an angel. They have to stay human. So he becomes human for her, and then she dies in an accident, and he's left now human and without her, and his angel buddy comes, sits with him. I forget where they were sitting, on some ledge high above a building or something. The character, Nicolas Cage, I believe, turns to the angel and says, did he do this to me? And I really love when Hollywood wrestles with that. I say, okay, what are they going to say about that? And his buddy looks at him and says, you know better than that. And I love that answer. You know better than that. God's not doing this to us. The fallenness of the world and the brokenness of the world we live in, we've done this to ourselves in some sense. And I don't mean we're personally blamable for whatever need happens to us. We just live in a chaotic world. So He's not doing it to us. Am I being punished for something I did wrong? I've heard that question so many times. Because if God does that, if God passes out diseases or disasters based on something we did wrong, God would have an endless excuse to torment us. Because we do wrong stuff all the time. We struggle with stuff in our life that we know is not all that He wants it to be. And if so, when we enter into struggle and we're trying to make sense of it and see it as punishment, we can do that to ourselves. And many people do. And then many people get angry at God because God, how dare you punish me for this? And this one about, is He allowing this to teach me something? Oh my gosh. This one makes my heart sick. I've watched parents of young children who've died look at the funeral, decide if enough people came to Christ to merit the death of their child. I know we grope for meaning. We grow up to make sense of a world in chaos, and I just don't think we can. But we dare not say, let's find some outcome of this that makes my suffering worth it. Because that's not how God's thinking. God's thinking about being redemptive in the world, and someday all of this will make sense when He brings justice to bear on the whole of the world, on all that's gone on throughout history and in our lives. Someday this will all make sense. He doesn't need to do bad stuff to us or orchestrate difficult circumstances so that we can learn something. There's stuff to be learned every day. But when you're going through trials, that's a great time to learn stuff. That's where my heart goes. Okay, God, what do I need to see about You? Where's Your love here that if I saw it, I could be at rest in this? What are You wanting me to know and teach me? I do think God teaches us through everything. But that doesn't mean He does things to us or allows things. We've talked about this before on the podcast, because I think our mistaken understanding of sovereignty means that God volitionally allows bad things in our life when He could stop them. Or He doesn't heal things that He could heal because He's choosing not to for some higher purpose. I understand why that comforts people in the chaos, but it is a false comfort. God doesn't have to be the orchestrator or the allower of your pain. He's letting this world play out, and He's invading it for His, as the rescuer in the story, the Savior, the Redeemer. He's going to take even this cancer in my body, and He's going to make good of it, even if it kills me at some point. He's going to make good of it in the meantime, or He might heal it. All that, I have no idea. But if we can wrestle with these questions, and more importantly, invite God into them. So God, are You punishing me? God, are you doing this? And find presence inside of uncertainty. And that's where our faith begins to recover. The fourth one is this. Look for God inside the new reality. Do I want God to heal my cancer and my back so surgery wouldn't have been necessary and I wouldn't have to go on chemo? Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'd love that. Did it happen? No. So what do? Keep fighting for healing? I've known people to do that. Fight for healing in the last period of their lives because they were just absolutely certain God owed them a healing if they just prayed right, had faith right, had whatever. And they, the last years, months of their existence is fraught with the agony of trying to earn a healing they can't earn or trying to endear God to a healing that is not happening for whatever reason. Healings and miracles are that for a reason. They're spectacular, they're amazing, and they're rare. If you get to be part of one, man, rejoice. It's awesome. And if not, accept the new reality and look for how God is within this. So the question is, where do you sense transcendence, presence, tenderness, beauty, transformation, or unexpected grace? Trust can begin to recover when we sense that God's posture towards us is not accusation or indifference, but something more like, I'm sorry you're going through this. I love you. I see you. You are not alone, even when you feel like you are. Let me help you navigate the road ahead. If it's the grief of a lost child, if it's the treatment for cancer diagnosis, if it's loss of job, loss of business, being ripped off by a partner. And I've met people who've lovely business going on with a partner and the partner cooked the books or took the money or crashed the business or whatever and left somebody that thought they had a friend and a business. No, they had neither. Is God big enough to navigate us through that, to pick up the pieces and say, okay, if this is my new reality, God, where are you in this new reality? And once we stop fighting the reality, then I think it allows God to more effectively move in us, live in us, transform us. And then we can talk about others. Are there other ways God makes himself known in our pain? The most important one is, I'm sorry you're going through this. Now, do you see why it's so important that we don't see God as the orchestrator or the volitional allower of our abuse, of our business failure, of our marriage failure, of whatever? That if God's the cause, then God doesn't get to look at us and say, I'm sorry you're going through this. Because he caused it. How can he be sorry? But for us to be able to step back and go, wow, God, you see the pain I'm in. You know how the brokenness of this world has culminated in this particular need or pain or brokenness. Now, how do you show yourself here? How do you walk me through this? How do you navigate? And Sarah and I talk about that all the time with my cancer treatments, with if I end up in relapse one day, and then what do we do about the relapse? And there'll be decisions to make, I'm sure, or it stays in remission. I die of something else and just turned out to be a nothing. But what I don't want to do now, and this is what I used to do so much as a younger man, was borrow all the anxieties for my imagined future and try and navigate them today. Like, what about this? And what if that happens? And what? And then trying to have enough grace to endure what hasn't even happened yet, and for which I don't have grace today because it's not here. Like when Jesus talked about grace, you have enough for today. That's Matthew 6, the end of it. Don't worry about tomorrow. Don't get into your imagined future because you're going to be there without grace. Live inside what's real today. And if you have to do that in day-by-day bits, do it in day-by-day bits. I've told the story of, man, fresh out of back surgery, on chemo, sick as a dog, in horrible pain, And I just told Sarah, I don't think I can go on like this. And I, sweetly, Sarah knelt down by the bed, grabbed me by the face, both cheeks in her hands. And she looked at me and she said, we're going to do this one day at a time, right? Is that what we said we were going to do? And I said, yeah. Can you get through today, Wayne? Can you get through this day? And I can't tell you how much courage that gave me. Yeah, I don't have to fight 16 months of this feeling or 10 years, or I don't have to fight that fight. The only fight I have to fight is, what is today handing me? And find grace enough for this day. And on that day, as sick as I was, we were going to see the doctor the next day. And Sarah just said, let's get through this one. We'll go there tomorrow. We'll find out if they've got some other stuff that'll help mitigate some of these side effects from the drugs you're on. We got through that day. We got through the next. Things got better. Things improved. Not always. Sometimes things don't always improve. But if you take the challenges one day at a time, you have a better hope of transiting it than if you try it on your own. And then finally, and I love this, if we could start with our honest questions, angers, let ourselves face what's changed, begin to accept the new reality, and then God inside that reality, and then find his voice in there. I love you. I'm sorry you're going through this. I know this is a horrible reality of a fallen creation, but you're not alone. I'm with you. Then there's this. Learn to live from that place of companionship. Now, how do I live? With God in the need with me, before it's resolved, before it's fixed. Now, treatment, uncertainty, relationships, and difficult decisions can be faced with a growing sense that God is with you, come what may. You can receive the care available to you, live as fully as you can each day, and remain open to whatever healing, meaning, or unexpected gift may emerge along the way. So that's, helping people down that road, myself going down that road and having people who've helped me be part of that. And you end up in this beautiful place of saying, okay, now I can handle the uncertainty. I can handle the treatments. I told you I'm a needle-averse guy, and chemo once a month is all about the needles. They got plenty of needles poking here and there and trying to do what they need to do. And my goodness, why we haven't by this point in the 21st century found ways to give medicine without poking needles, that's just beyond me. I'm with Dr. Bones on Star Trek, who said, what? This is barbaric. It is barbaric. And you'd think when I was watching that as a 12, 13-year-old kid, you'd think by now we wouldn't have needles. But boy, we have got needles. We have got lots of needles. But you know what? Even going to chemo, the people that are there, the people get to talk to, the healing that it brings inside my body to navigate this disease, it's all worth it. And I'm not alone with it. Not only is Sarah there, she's always there. She's so sweet. I tell you, you don't have to go. They're just going to poke me and stuff, and I'll come home. And she goes, I'm going. And she's been there every time for me. But then there's God. Always God. Always God making good, even out of things that are tragic. Sarah and I read this weekend, too, from Psalm 66, just part of our reading. And I want to comment on this just before we get done. I hope there's been some meaning in here for some of you. Just this process, I'll put it up on a blog or something, a live stream, so that people, you have to write all that down that I just read to you. We'll put it up there so you can get it. But we're reading Psalm 66, and it says this, blessed are God, O peoples. Give him a thunderous welcome. This is in the message. This is Psalm 66, 8 through 12. Didn't he set us on the road to life? Didn't he keep us out of the ditch? I read that going, okay, I don't know that God's always kept me out of the ditch. I end up in some pretty painful places on this journey. And then if you stop there with the idea, the mistaken belief that so many Christians have, that if I'm following God, nothing bad will ever happen to me. The affliction will not come nigh the tent of the righteous. God won't let me fall in a ditch. And so my life will be easy and I will never be challenged. And then when challenge comes, the disillusionment of believing that false doctrine of God's people get a pain-free, healthy existence. It's only bad people that get diseases or lose their jobs or their marriage falls apart or their child dies or. Then when it happens to you, you're left all alone. And how was God going to be with you if he was supposed to keep this from happening? Many of us think that's what it means. God will keep you out of a ditch. The affliction will not come nigh the tent of the righteous. But you got David writing that stuff. That was a lot of bad stuff that happened to David, that's for sure. And then he goes on to write this. He trained us first, passed us like silver through refining fires, brought us into this hard scrabble country, pushed us to our very limit, road tested us inside and out, took us to hell and back. That doesn't sound like keeping you out of the ditch, unless the ditch isn't about hard things happening. The ditch is about the loss of faith, the loss of companionship, the loss of trust with the God who loves us, who's offered to be our Redeemer, who's offered to set a table before us in the presence of our enemies, who's offered to rescue us out of the darkest places, who has offered his light to be a guide to us, even when everything else around us looked dark. He took us to hell and back. Not because God created the hell, but what the psalmist is saying is, man, life can get desperate. And in those things, if we learn, if we let the difficulties in our life refine us from the inside, I think the real dividend on that, I know everything about humanity looks for, I want the reward here and now. I think there's so much about Jesus talking about, well, if you pray here to be seen by men, you want to pray on the stage with a microphone, you know what? That's your reward. That the people looking at you say, oh, that guy prays great, you're done. But those who go into the closet, those who give money to the needy without drawing attention to, without fanfare, without getting their name carved on a gold brick in the foyer that's fake brick anyway, those people will get their reward where? Here? Or in eternity? I think our faith being refined, if it's through the extremities of this world, if it's through dealing with cancer and its treatment, if it's through dealing with divorce and its aftermath, if it's with dealing with great sorrow and grief in our lives, if we find him in that, if he keeps us out of the ditch of abandoning him, then our lives are being prepared for something glorious and something wonderful. So he'd been road tested us inside out, took us to hell and back, and finally he brought us to this well-watered place. Gosh, even with what Sarah and I are facing right now, I do feel like we live in a well-watered place. God is caring for us well, even through what Sarah's been through and the healing going on in her life and the difficulties of doing it. It's building something in her. And I honestly think the reward is in heaven. There's some here, certainly. When we can navigate life with God inside us, alongside us, with us, then beautiful, navigate that. But the day comes when this world wraps up. And I think what God has shaped in us, if we've let him, if we haven't just given up, hurting, in despair, broken, and stay there, if we let God save us from the ditch, which is the loss of faith, then we find our way to resilience. Then there's gifts of grace every day that we can be grateful for. Then there's the ability to navigate the most brutal realities that the world can throw at us and find the life of God growing inside us all the while. That's what I pray for you, for us. If this is a process that you might find helpful to encourage others, I hope you do. I hope you're more intentional about finding someone to care for, care with. Not paternal, not top down, I'm here as your rescuer. It's not that. All you have to do is ask somebody, hey, do you want some help with this? Do you want somebody to walk with you? Because I'm happy to walk with you. I ask people to do that in the hardest moments of my life. I'll just ask them, can you walk with me through this? And every person I've ever approached has said yes, except one. One just looked at me and said, Wayne, I don't have the emotional surplus to walk with you through this. And man, I love their honesty. I thought that was beautiful. Thank you. Thank you for letting me know right up front. You haven't got it for this, but I'll find some who do. And if you've got some surplus, this is all, if you may be on the care side of this, you may be on the, I need this help. And great, ask God to provide you a place where you can find safe, non-judgmental space to begin a journey of letting faith recover in you and have a relationship with God and presence with Him that's greater than the pain coming at you, greater than the grief that you bear. Great, that's the hope. That's the hope of Jesus Christ. Emmanuel, God with you, God inside you, that He's, but yes, this world really, really sucks. Unfairness, brokenness, hurt, crime. It's, boy, the things that can happen in this age are horrible. But God's bigger still. He's bigger. And He's always inviting you to life. And then when you find that life in Him, then He'll want you to give it away. Give it away to somebody else who can't bear to be alone in the circumstance that they're in. And that's how life spreads in the world, to you, through you. And that's just love.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.